Happy Monday, anglers. This is Colter Hansen with the We Suck at Fishing podcast. We're joined by my co-host, Nolan Leiby. How's it going, Nolan?
It's going. It has been a long week, so I'm happy we're finally getting together and doing some work that we enjoy.
Yeah, we're recording this on Thursday, June 10th.
Sometime. It's June 10th. Yeah, we're recording this a little bit later than we normally would like to.
It's been a long week.
Very long week. We've legitimately not had time to get together at all and work, besides at work.
But, I mean, luckily, we're so resilient that we still managed to get this done.
I'm a strong guy, and I'm strong-willed, and I got a strong
swimmer.
Yeah, don't ask me to swim. Dude, I'll just catch the things that do.
I feel like I've almost drowned 3 times in my life.
From being a poor swimmer or just a poor event?
Poor decision-making. But still,
is it a combo of poor decision making and a poor swimmer?
I think being a poor swimmer had nothing to do with the fact that I was knocked out in the water.
Ah.
So the first time I was like 15 or 16 and we were cliff jumping and there was a gal there and I was like, do you know what the best thing to do would be? To do a double front flip off the cliff and impress her, see what happens, you know, see where the night takes us. So I'm psyching myself up. I'm like, this is awesome. I do a double front flip, land it, and then my elbow hits the water, and I just uppercut myself, immediately knocked out. Boom, done. And I just remember, like, oh, that hurt. And then I come to, and, like, some guy, I don't even, never met him before in my life, is, like, dragging me to the shore. And it was, like, the scariest moment, because I come to, I'm, like, immediately start fighting, because that's what they say. And the guy's like, calm down, dude. Like, if you fight, you're going to drown both of us. And it's like, oh, yeah. And then I was like, awareness kicked in.
I really hate this guy. So I really started fighting.
I fucking slit his throat. Just died there. No.
And then I swam his dead body and mine back to shore.
No, we get up on top of the cliffs and I'm talking to the people that I'm there with. And they're like, yeah, you didn't come up for a while. We thought that we were playing a prank on us. I'm like, yeah, it makes sense.
That's something you would do.
That is something I would do. And they're like, so immediately we jumped in. The guy that saved me, he jumped in with like all his shit in his pocket, his shoes on and stuff. They jumped in there. They were looking for me a while. The river's deep there. And they gave up. And while they were swimming back to shore, like, oh, well, my friend's dead. He kicked me in the fucking head. That's how they found me.
Jesus.
Yeah, that was fun. But that was lack of I can't swim while I'm asleep. The second time, another time I remember, we were a friggin' like inner tubing on boats where we had 2 inner tubes connected to the boat rather than like 1 inner tube with 2 people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're battling tubes. I've done that.
Yeah. We just came together and hit heads. And I just remember like an out of body experience where I'm like looking at myself. I'm like, dude, you're drowning right now. Figured out. This is not the first time. You got to get your life together.
This is round 2, buddy. You're not a cat.
Yeah, you only get 1 life.
And I'm not living it right.
Yeah, there's like that whole YOLO thing around the time, so I was like...
What was cringe. The third time?
I don't remember. I had anaphylactic shock once, standing outside of water, but I was drinking a liquid that's what caused it, so...
Oh.
Yeah.
Was it a hot liquid?
No, it was codeine cough syrup. I was hitting that lean, I had that walkie slush, and immediately my throat closed.
That's funny. Well, I've only almost drowned once. And I was not showing off. I was by myself. And I was hiking for a bear.
Oh, yeah.
And I went to cross a very fresh spring runoff river. And I found a spot. I was like, yeah, you know, that's not that deep. It's flowing slower in comparison. It was still pretty fast. I was like, I bet I could trudge across that, though. It's like my first 3 steps in, it was a hole. I took in and the river just took me. I floated for like 100 yards, ripped myself out, and was just like, you're an idiot. So I sat there for a while and contemplated trying to cross it again. I was like, no, you're dripping wet. So I walked myself like 3.5 miles back to my truck.
I was going to ask how far you were. That would suck.
Head to toe, my rifle, everything, my bat, my pack.
Dude, I bet you were friggin' blistered everywhere.
Yeah, I was blistered everywhere. And it was spring runoff early. It was like first couple days of opening bear season in the area. So it was May 15th, 16th.
It's cold.
It was cold. Like, my biggest concern at that point was hypothermia, not drowning. But luckily, I was hiking and sweating my ass off, so I probably gained it back quick.
Yeah, you're just like hiking so hard and aggressively that you're all the water evaporates. You're dry for like 4 seconds, and then you're immediately soaked again from perspiration.
I wish it was like that. No, I got back to the truck still soaked. I just remember I got butt naked at my truck. I was wringing out my underwear just so I could wear something on the ride home.
That's funny.
So yeah, I literally only wore underwear home. People were just looking at me weird. It was fun.
This guy's an insane person.
Also, no, the funny part of that, I was in my underwear and was driving home. I saw a huge herd of elk. So naturally, I got out of my truck in just my underwear and was standing on the side of the road in my binos.
That's awesome. And
multiple people drove by. It was a fun time.
They were like, how close are we to a school? We really got to stop this guy.
This guy's on to something.
He's got something going on, and I'm not sure what it is.
Is he looking at those calf elk?
How old are those elk?
Not old enough, buddy. Oh. So yeah, there's our drowning experiences. Not fun ones.
No.
I don't think any drowning experience is fun for anyone.
Unless you drown somebody.
Yeah. I think, if you're looking to kill a guy, I think drowning them would be fun. Waterboarding.
You know, they always say, like waterboarding is supposed to be so bad, and then I've always wanted to try it.
You know, from what I've heard, is people really, really get that euphoric experience right before they die from it. It's like drowning in general. People don't like suffer from drowning because as they're dying in that moment, they get like a super euphoric experience, and then it's not that bad.
Just like autoerotic asphyxiation.
Yeah, but on accident.
Well, you die on accident during that too, I guess.
Yeah, you're right. We don't know much about that subject. Okay, Coulter might know some about that subject.
I've never died.
I've gone through a lot of belts.
I died, but then I lived.
Oh, fuck. All right, so now that we've talked about accidentally trying to kill ourselves, Coulter's going to read a fun fishing article that's not related to drowning at all.
No, it's related to fishing. So, a fisherman in South Carolina recently reeled in a Goliath grouper that he estimated weighed up to 400 pounds. It's a really big Goliath grouper.
That's a nice Goliath grouper.
Yeah. On Thursday, Tallboy Fishing Charters posted a video of a huge fish being reeled in on Facebook. According to them, they were fishing off the coast of the Hilton Head Island, and the charters...
Richard Pulitzer.
Yeah.
Filmed the clip.
Thank you. Basically, what they were doing is they were fishing, they clawed into it, and they got it up, and they're like, holy shit, this is probably like at least 400 pounds. And then they got it up to the boat and got the hook out. But one thing that I've always wanted to do is fish a Goliath grouper. Did you ever watch that video of that guy right by that spillway in that canoe that was like got a Goliath grouper up? It got to the surface and then its tail snapped and it just immediately broke the guy's rod.
Like, really?
Yeah.
He had that much force just with his tail snap alone.
Yeah, or he...
Assuming it was a downforce with the tail. Yeah, yeah.
Or he shook his head or something, but that guy on that line, he still ended up landing that fish.
Jeez. Excuse me, everyone. I'm drinking beer, burping. I've watched a lot of videos of guys catching Goliath groupers. They take like a huge rope. Like, what would you say that is?
It's like a good inch.
Yeah,
inch
like and a half. An inch rope. And... not lengthwise, but girthwise. And they'll take that and they pretty much just put the hook on that. And these groupers hang out in pretty rugged areas. They really like the pillars coming out, like bridges crossing ocean waters. They really hang out around those or like wrecked ships. They like structure for some reason. So a lot of those guys who fish groupers will use those ropes. So when they hook one on, those, if they go in and intertwine with all that crap, they're more than likely not going to break them off. They might be there for hours, but it'll be worth it in the long run.
That's like those guys that like fucking fight like hammerhead sharks on like from shore for like 7 hours.
Oh, yeah.
They hook them out there and then they come back to the shore to try to land them. Mm-hmm. And they're just fighting all day. That would be a blast.
It's like two guys on a rod.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys, one rod.
That's going to be... We're patenting that video.
Yeah, you guys don't do anything with that.
Fuck off. Edit that out right now.
They're already writing it down. But yeah, those groupers are crazy. I've watched a... What's that show, River Monsters?
Yeah, River Monsters.
I've watched that one where he doesn't fish a river and catches a grouper. And I've watched a couple other fishing shows where they just nail toads. And a lot of it is done... Yeah, they do it by that hand rope, and it's just... You have to wear huge-ass gloves so you don't get your hand cut off.
Dude, I've hand-lined trout before.
Yeah.
That's a chore.
Oh, yeah, with our little tiny line
yeah.
in comparison to a girthy rope that shouldn't hurt your hand, but a 400-pound fish.
That would be tough.
Yeah, dude.
That'd be a multiple dude kind
of operation. My last girlfriend wasn't even 400 pounds.
And I could barely manage that.
I hand-fished her every day. All right. We've got one question coming in from a listener. We'll read that before we get to the main topic. Coulter?
Yes, so this question was sent in by Cody H. The question is, how do trout get through the spring runoff? With the amount of dirt and silt in the water, how are the trout able to keep themselves healthy with that type of dirt or with that type of water flowing through their gills? The answer to that is, when the sediment begins to fill the trout's gills, the fish begin excessively opening and closing their gills to try to clean it out, any silt or any sediment. It's basically like the fish coughing is really what it yeah. does. And also, they fish naturally produce mucus to keep their gills clean as well, although any excessive amount of turbidity in the water leads to stress and possible disease.
Yeah, clinging silt, clinging gravel, all sorts yeah. of stuff.
So if they're like constantly producing that mucus, they can also get like bacterial infections too.
Could that be compared to a smoker's lungs? I don't know if a smoker creates mucus. It's probably covered up by tobacco.
Well, they get phlegm. Trout get...
Phlegm. Okay.
Trout phlegm.
So there you go. If you're a smoker, you're like a fish, and fish fucking water, so I'm not drinking it or something like that.
That's not nothing.
That's not nothing. All right. Now that we finished our question, we'll be back in a little bit with our main topic, how to become a better angler, something we all want to do.
Yes. One thing every angler has experienced is getting skunked, be it going to a body of water and only catching 1 to 0 fish, or completely abandoning all your training and knowledge. No matter the excuse for not catching fish, it's important not to let an unlucky day ruin your desire and enjoyment for the sport of fishing. So in today's episode, we discuss some of the reasons you could be having an off day and how to make those days farther between.
So now normally, when you can't seem to get a fish to bite, your first thought would be, well, the fish gods have abandoned me and I will never get out of this rut. That very well may be true, but more than likely other circumstances are at play. Like you're not a shitty fisherman. You just don't have the knowledge of a good fisherman yet. So these circumstances could be weather, not throwing the right bait, not fishing at the right time of day, not fishing the best part of that water, and temperature. With all of these variables, it could be that you are making one or multiple mistakes. So today we're going to be discussing multiple reasons why you might not be catching fish across different species.
So let's open the show by discussing the one thing we can't change, the weather. Rain, snow, wind, or shine, what matters is being able to use the weather to your advantage. So first let's discuss how trout react to the weather. Trout prefer low light, cloudy conditions for a few reasons. One, their eyes are adapted for low light, so they have an advantage over their prey, such as insects and other small fish. They also like low light to hide from aerial abductors, aerial predators.
Same thing.
It makes them more confident feeders if they're not worried about getting abducted. I got there eventually.
We got there.
If insect hatches are also affected by light conditions. On a hot, sunny day, the hatch is usually earlier in the day and is more aggressive but short-lived, while on a cloudy day, the hatch will start later and last a lot longer, giving you more opportunities to catch fish. If it's raining, it may be a good opportunity for the water to be either cool during a hot summer day or warm during the early or late season. Water droplets hitting the surface of the water oxygenates it and makes the trout more active. Although, for fishing, the best time to hit it is right after it rains, rather than during. Because of the humidity It is good for hatch activity.
Because the humidity is good for hatch activity.
Yes.
Yeah.
For trout fishing, wind is usually a nightmare when trying to present a fly, be it lack of accuracy or issues with being able to cast overall. One silver lining to novice fly fishermen is that the water is slightly disturbed, so the fish have a harder time discerning a bad cast with a lot of drag on the fly from a natural fly.
On the mention quick of hot days, a more aggressive hatch but short-lived, and on those hot sunny days, you might be seeing multiple hatches.
Yes.
You're not going to be seeing, you might see multiple species hatching through that day, so keep your eye out for different bugs at different times of that heat. All right. Now that we discussed how the weather can affect fishing trout, let's talk about the things you can change. Now, if we're fly fishing or we're not having any luck landing a trout, let's look at some things we can change. First, casting. If you're having trouble casting, usually the issue is that you're not taking your time. And what we mean by that is most fishermen, when they start fly fishing, is their back cast isn't visible, but their forward cast is. So their forward cast is almost always perfect. So when they bring it back, they're not paying attention to the line and they're not timing it correctly. So as more or less when they cast back, they're casting forward too soon to where they're snapping their line, they're whipping it, and they're losing flies. You don't want to be the guy whipping your fly on the water.
Yeah, that popping sound really screams, oh, I friggin' suck at this.
Hey, look at here. This isn't a bullwhip. It's a shitty fisherman. But really on that, just be... What's the word I'm trying to look for?
I don't know.
No. How about you just be aware of how long that line is flying back there. Even if you have to turn your head a little bit, don't turn your shoulders to mess up your form. But just if you have to look back and see your line going back, make sure you're making that good cast. Keep as many flies as you can. And another casting mistake is people putting way too much muscle into that cast. A lot of casting is just finesse and technique and muscle memory, not so much strength. So what if you get all that down and you can't cast far enough? Well, you can either try wading a little bit deeper into the water or just start double hauling, which double hauling is, it's a skill that took me a little bit to learn. Probably you too, Coulter.
Yeah, of course.
But after I got it down, I think every cast I double haul. And what a double haul is most fishermen release their line when they cast forward. They let out more line when they cast forward. But the double haul is you're letting out line in your back cast and your forward cast. A good tip that works for me for my double hauls is, instead of stripping that line as I cast, I'll sit there and strip out X amount of line that I think I'm going to be casting. And then I have all that room to play in my double haul back and forth. So that works out pretty well. On top of that, maybe your casting is fine, but your presentation is lacking. And what we mean by that is how the fish sees your fly, which Coulter kind of mentioned mending your line earlier. When your fly lands on the water, depending on where your line's sitting, it may pull your fly, it may drag it, and the key thing on that is make sure your fly looks like it's floating as naturally as possible. So that takes some mending and all that stuff. But yeah, and the next is, what if I seem to be doing everything right, and I'm getting bites, but I'm not landing fish? We all get excited. We all get pumped when we have a fish hit us.
I get stoked.
Yeah, most people, Jeremy, weighed it, and it's just like, that rod's touching the ground behind you when you set that hook. But a little thing I like to remember when I'm fly fishing is those hooks are tiny. You maybe have to move that hook an eighth of an inch to set it.
Can I tell you a funny story?
Yeah.
I was fishing in, like, the Gillette fishing ponds, and we were fishing for, like, bullheads.
Okay.
Just, like, some nonsense fishing. I hit a bobber out there with like a worm on, you know, just fucking around, mostly just having conversation while fishing is the secondary objective. And I had my 12-foot like ocean pull up.
Oh, your huge one, yeah.
Yeah. And my buddy was walking behind me and my bar went down and I set the hook. I smacked him like right on the collarbone, chopped him. I dropped him with it and I set the hook so hard it pulled the bullhead out of the water and it like flew like 18 feet back behind us.
Jeez, you landed the fish though.
I landed the fish and I landed my buddy.
Okay, I have a video somewhere. I'll post it on our Instagram of Coulter in a kayak fishing with this 12-foot rod. It is so ridiculous. Your first thought's going to be like, oh, overcompensation.
That's not wrong.
Yeah, he's got small hands. So, all right. So, on top of setting the hook, there's another thing that could mess with your fishing look, and is choosing the right fly, which we covered that in episode 2, I believe it was. Yeah, episode 2, Match of the Hatch. Yes. So, if you want to really dive deep into choosing a fly, go back to episode 2 and listen to it. We've already covered it.
Yes, I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Yeah, we're over it.
So, something to keep in mind is that a trout are going to be... Excuse me. We'll fix that in post.
No.
Something to keep in mind is where the trout are going to be feeding and how to identify those places. Trout like structure. So we have to be able to identify where they're going to be to be able to fish them. Now, in this episode, we are mainly going to be covering rivers. But in lakes and ponds, try to target them roaming in the shallows or just off a drop-off or a point.
Which that drop-off is going to be off the shore. I mean, any lake's going to be different, but roughly, what, off the shore, probably like 10 to 20 feet?
Yeah, or even in smaller ponds, like 4 to 8. It just kind of depends. Just look at the water. You should be able to tell.
Yeah, you should be able to see it. And if not, walk out there. Be a man.
Yeah, be a man.
When you drop off, just swim back to the shelf.
Yeah. All right. In rivers, there are a few main different types of structures. One, the riffle, a run, a pool, an eddy, and finally the tailout. The riffle is a shallow, choppy, rocky section of the water. The environment provides all the necessary things for the trout to thrive. The run is downstream of the riffle and is usually deeper with a more stable current. Trout like to lie near the bottom along the edge of the current and eat the food that floats by. The pool is normally the deepest part of any river and is usually where fish hide to avoid the hot sun. When trout are hanging out in the deeper parts, they tend not to be very active. An eddy is formed by a blocking of the current either by a big boulder or when the riverbank makes a pocket. What happens is the current goes around the pocket and creates a small whirlpool where fish like to gather, where food for the fish likes to gather. And then fish also gather.
I say both.
Both. Finally, the tailout is a shallow, flat section of the water right after the pool. This is where all the food is funneled right to the trout after wading downstream. That's kind of like the end, and then it resets back to the riffle.
Yeah. So, identifying all these spots, you can catch fish in all these areas, but what it comes down to is making sure your drift of your fly is correctly, so mending your line, fly selection, which could be, oh, they're hitting a hatch of dry, like the flies are coming up and surfacing, they're finally becoming dry flies, they have wings, they're about to leave, and like we covered in Match the Hatch episode, 90% of those trout's feeding is in that subsurface or a little bit below. So all those fish hanging out in those eddy areas and stuff like that, they're feeding on those emergers.
Mm-hmm.
So they're hitting those smaller subsurface bugs that are about to break through and be real flying critters.
Mm-hmm. This all this river structure really applies to all species, but we're just covering it in the trout section.
We're covering in the trout section. Yeah, I mean, bass act a little bit differently in rivers. We're not going to cover that as much today, but they still manner.
Mm-hmm.
Their mannerisms are still pretty similar. So speaking of that, we'll go over to bass fishing, and we've discovered a lot, but we've also discussed like how the weather affects bass fishing. We covered that in episode 3. So we're just going to sit here and do it again anyways. So like trout, bass also have eyes more conducive to low light conditions. So your cloudy days are going to have a lot more success because the bass will be out and more active. On a warm, sunny day with no clouds, the bass will be hiding in the shade under a tree or in the deep vegetation. Precipitation is really when bass like to play. The rain makes a timid fish aggressive. Yeah, that is very true. That goes for a lot of species, honestly. If it's raining, remember that the fish are going to be leaving their hidey holes to school and become more active. So make your bait act accordingly.
And really what that means is like when they're, make your stuff, like pretend like your bait is leaving the cover because that's what most bait fish are going to do. And then when you're fishing the shore while it's raining, when the rain hits the ground and it runs off into the body of water you're fishing, like if you're fishing a pond where the rain runs into the water from the shore.
Where the bait
fish. Yeah. It's going to stir up a lot of minerals and shit. And that's where the bait fish find their food. So they're going to be hanging a lot closer to the shore. And that's right. where your bass are going to come in and feed on the bait fish.
Just that food chain.
Yeah.
This bigger fish eats the smaller and bigger and bigger. There's always a bigger fish. Like, I'm bigger than Coulter. And I'm going to eat him.
Nice.
Nope. Oh, where are we at? Okay. So when fishing in the rain, think that the bass are going to be a lot more active. So fishing deep with like a Senko worm, something like that, or a Mr. Twister won't be as effective as fishing with like a spinnerbait or a topwater, something way more active, shiny, reflective, really giving them something to look at. And wind also makes for great bass fishing because it hides you and stirs up the bass. That water rippling, they're not going to see you as well. And that's making their water more active. That's moving those bait fish around. It's overall, for bass, making it way better habitat.
Windy bass fishing is probably the best time to use like a spinnerbait.
Not with a bait caster.
Maybe for you, buddy. Now we can take what we learned about river structure and apply it to bass. But bass fishing is more commonly done in lakes and ponds. So we're going to talk about that instead. Bass tend to hide more often than not, so identifying the places where they hide leads more to finding bass. You can start by looking at the shoreline. If there's a big overhanging tree casting shadows, or maybe there's a lot of docks for the fish to navigate around, or there could be vegetation like thick moss, grass, or lily pads that could provide cover from the sun. Any of these places are a great place to start looking. Under the surface, you can try to find like submerged logs or big rocks, anything that these fish can hide next to.
You know, speaking of this vegetation, I think some of my best bass fishing days are throwing on a big Mr. Twister, a pretty long Senko worm. And I use like dark olive, dark green with glittery. They're really flashy, but they're more earthy toned as a body overall. And in those mossy, super vegetated areas, you cast that in there and you let that sink pretty much right on the surface of that moss, and it might drop a little bit below, but you're gonna have a bass's attention on any slow day like that.
Yeah, or that's another great time to use like a punch jig or something.
Yeah,
just really heavy,
something that gets deep under that,
deep and weedless. Those are your two things.
Yeah. Run it like Texas-y with some weight, and you will probably get on those hot days, you'll get down to where those bass are. So now, remember, in the heat of the day, most bass are less active, so we try to fish them in the morning or the afternoon through the night. If you're within the correct time frame and the bass are not being very aggressive, try to fish them low and slow with those big Senko worms or Mr. Twister like I was just talking about, or any big soft bait, honestly.
Yeah.
If it matches their area and their habitat, you should be using it. They'll hit it. And if the bass are being more aggressive, you can try to target them with like a faster and more appealing bait. Like, you know, like any crankbait, honestly.
Yeah, crankbaits would work great for that scenario.
I've caught quite a few bass on different crankbaits. I mean, shads.
Yeah.
Random stuff like that. So, yeah. When the bass are spawning, they like to hang out in beds. They chill out there. They're protecting shit. So if you speed by with a big lure, there's a good chance they're going to be coming at it because they view you as a threat to their eggs. They don't want that. They're going to come attack you if you're threatening their little babies.
So it's kind of fun. When you rip something past them, usually they're not trying to like eat what rips past them. They're just trying to nip at you.
They're defending. Yeah.
So like that's when like having like a trailer hook or something or like a big treble hook behind you, they're going to nip at it and then they're going
to... You'll nip at it. You'll feel that hit and you set your hook and that trailer is going to... catch that fish either way. Well, most cases.
Hopefully.
That's the goal. So, another thing for bass fishing is what bait you're using. It all depends on what time of day it is, the weather, how deep the water is, and the temperature. Not many factors to play into that. There's many baits and lures and stuff. You guys are going to learn it as you fish anyways. Another common bass fishing mistake is not rigging your soft baits to look natural, which I just mentioned the Texas rig. When you rig a soft bait like the Texas rig, you want to make sure your worms look as natural as possible. So you throw them out there and they're going to be straight. They're going to wiggle like a worm in the water. And finally, another mistake attributed to novice anglers is hurling your bait out to the center of the lake or pond and reeling back. Those bass, they might be hanging out in the center of the pond. They might be sitting under some moss or fresh vegetation cover, but a lot of the bass I've caught weren't that far out.
Yeah, you don't need to bomb it to the center of the lake and then hope something's going to.
They're hanging out in closer shore cover because they see those trees. There's a lot more shade on the side. So a good tip for bass fishing in those smaller ponds and stuff is cast across the shoreline and reel it, because most likely they'll come out of those cattails and that super thick vegetation and come eat that.
That's a good call. Now let's talk about how the weather may affect more aggressive predator fish like northern pike or muskie. These fish tend to prefer a cloudy day, but a nice warm sunny day can also raise the metabolism, making them more aggressive. Usually, if it's a sunny day, the best time is in the afternoon and well into the evening. Fishing in the rain for these fish is also not an issue, but look for them more in the shallows feeding on bait fish in that time. Wind does not really play a factor in how these fish react, but if you don't like fishing in the wind, then don't do it. Often on warm days, try to target these fish like in new vegetation or old vegetation. It just, like, what I mean is, like, if the new weeds have grown up this year, then fish those weeds. But if new vegetation hasn't grown yet, then just fish the old stuff.
If you have no new vegetation, just fish your old stuff. But they're most likely going to be hanging out in that fresher stuff, more nutrient dense. Mm-hmm. Bait fish are going to be hanging out in that fresher stuff as well. So, yeah. I say that a lot. So, yeah. I need to quit doing that. So, yeah. Now with these more aggressive fish, the mistakes you make may not be during catching the fish, but they may be handling them once they are caught. These pike and muskie have very sharp teeth. I think I've been cut by them a couple of times. Coulter, too, probably.
Oh, yeah, and you don't stop bleeding either.
It's yeah, they cut and they make you a bleeder for a while. That can be very dangerous to the angler. You don't want to hurt yourself. So when landed these fish, it's a good call to use a net. There's other ways to catch them, though, if you don't have a net. So what we've done before is, even if we net them, even pulling out of the net, we'll get under that gill plate. Not in the gills necessarily. You're pretty much grabbing under the tongue. So where those gills meet the bottom jaw, just that little taper in there, you're going to put your fingers in there. You do not want to touch the gills. Why is that, Coulter?
Well, so number one, they feel super weird. And yeah, they're pretty abrasive too, so they kind of hurt if you rake your hands across them. That's why people say, "Oh, well, the gill plate's really sharp." No, it's just their rakers. That's what we call like a pike's gills. Mm-hmm. But the main thing is, it's super bad for the fish. Like that's like if somebody reached their hands down your throat and fucked around with your lungs.
Yeah, scraped off all that cigarette smoke or something. Oh no,
that might be healthy.
Yeah, but. Make sure you're handling those fish correctly, because if you get chomped on, it's not going to be fun.
Did you watch that video of that guy ice fishing who couldn't get his northern out of the hole, so he just grabbed it and lipped it out of the hole?
Uh-oh.
Dude, it was Blood like a huge, City. Like, 40-inch pike. He just, like...
Oh, I bet that cut him deep.
Oh, yeah. They have gnarly teeth. Dude, like, the bigger they get, just... I saw a muskie skeleton once of, like, a big, like, 48-inch muskie. And, like, its jaw was still intact, and its teeth were, like, rattlesnake teeth.
Jeez. One time I caught a muskie on a, it was, like, 8-pound test. I didn't have any braided line or, like, a steel leader on or anything. And luckily, I set my hook early enough that I caught him in the front of his mouth to where he didn't even touch my line.
Yeah, he didn't have time to, like, rake it.
Yeah, I was very fortunate in that. That was the first and last time I didn't use braided line or steel leader on one of those guys. So yeah, make sure your equipment's up to date when you're catching those two. You want the right line, just so you're not snapping them off and they're going around with jewelry for the rest of their life.
I've caught a pike with a steel leader in its mouth all the time.
Really?
Yeah, where it's snapped off in front of the steel leader. Yeah, like yeah. They tied a shitty knot and it's just got some bling.
Even if they didn't tie a shitty knot, they just probably used their old line from 2 years ago or something.
Yeah. Always, like, remember, you should change your line out at least once a season.
Once a season. Then when that especially goes for fly line. If, like, you have a floating fly line and it starts sinking, if it's new, go return it. If they let you return it, yeah, say my floating line is not doing what it says it should. They'll most likely replace it. But, yeah, if your floating line quits floating after a long season, just go put new line on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good tip that for fly fishing anyways. And another tip for these northerns, you want to bring tools like long forceps or needle nose pliers and like possibly good wire cutters. just because that steel leader, and you want to get, if they swallow that shit way down in there, you need those long pliers. You don't want him, he's probably going to die if you leave that lure in him.
Yeah. And if you can't get it out, that's where the good long wire cutters come. You just want to try to nip your shit off like as close to them as possible, even to give them the best chances of survival.
Even if you cut it below the barb and he's stuck with that in there, that's better than a whole lure.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Plus, you don't want to lose your lure.
Circle hook or whatever. So, yeah. Bring the proper gear to catch these big fish because they're mean and they're also delicate.
Yes. We treat them nicely. Let's talk about walleye. Let's talk about the weather they like. Walleye prefer a cloudy day, especially in the warmer months. This makes dawn and dusk fishing short-lived but very active. Cloud cover at night, on the other hand, is detrimental to walleye fishing compared to a clear night with a full moon shortly after the or shortly after a full moon. So like,
is that a yawn?
3 days after, it's late. 3 days after a full moon is probably like one of your best times.
Now, I was going to say, I think some of the bigger walleyes I've ever seen caught, the pictures were in the dark.
Oh yeah.
The only times I really see walleye pictures in the light is guys who are like spear fishing or something.
Yeah, we're lucky.
Yeah, lucky.
If it's also, it's going to be a really cloudy day. It's not like...
Yeah, if they have a shitty, weathery day out, they probably have good luck. Mm-hmm. Sorry to interrupt you.
Well, hopefully it's windy because walleye fishing in the wind is a very common activity, down to the fact that there's even a nickname for it called walleye chop. As much as that may seem like a myth, walleye travel in the shallows to find bait fish when it gets windy, so that's why it gets its name.
Choppy.
Choppy wind. Now, walleye chop is not the only saying when it comes to wind and fishing. There's a poem that goes, "If the wind is from the north, a good angler does not go forth. Wind from the east makes the fish bite the least. If the wind is from the south, it blows the bait into the fish's mouth. And if the wind is from the west, then the fishing is the best."
That's a fun little poem. I don't know if I've ever tried to apply my fishing rules by that.
It's kind of a dork thing to do, but if you want to try it, try it.
Yeah, don't be a dork. So... don't do those rules.
I don't do dark stuff.
I don't do dark stuff, Betty. Night fishing for walleyes on big rivers is a very fun way to fish during the summer. As water temperatures rise, so does the activity of these river walleyes. At night, many can be found chasing schools of bait fish in shallow shoreline areas, easily fished from the bank or a boat. Look for these fish near tributary mouths and river junctions where two currents merge. Cast a quarter-ounce spinnerbait with a white Mr. Twister trailer upstream and immediately begin your retrieve. Walleyes often strike even before you reel up slack, so it's a quick hit. Small shad imitation crankbaits worked slowly may also produce well. So yeah, work that crank, small that shad. Throw that small shad out there and you're just gonna, it's like a slow work. You're not gonna be reeling it in. You're not gonna, like a lure, you're gonna jig them slowly. It's kind of like,
it's almost it to like using a jerk bait.
Yeah.
Jerk, reel, wait. Jerk, reel, wait.
Which is a lot of bass fishing, too.
Yeah.
So these river walleyes, your jigging and reeling methods are going to honestly be pretty similar.
It's a lot of technique involved.
Yeah. Very, very much so.
Let's talk about some non-predatory fish like catfish and carp. So let's ask, how does the weather affect them? Well, let's start with catfish. Catfish, unlike regular cats, prefer to feed in cloudy weather and tend to go deeper water when the sun comes out. The sun only really helps with warming the water and increases the fish's metabolism, but they still stay dormant until the late evening. At night until early morning is going to be the best time of day for fishing them. Light rain does affect the fish, but really heavy rain makes the catfish start moving. When it comes to wind, it's not uncommon for catfish to move to the shore in the direction of the wind, but because they're bottom feeders, there is a lot of other variables that get them moving and more active rather than the wind.
So catfish anglers do not move or change locations nearly as much as they should. Changing spots allows fishermen to cover more water, and more often than not, they'll catch more fish. Like, I was going to cover being impatient in this, but catfishing is the only thing like you can be really impatient in. Mm-hmm. Most fishermen generally tend to change their spots way too quick, and they give up way too easy, but catfishing is the opposite. If you're not having luck, you know, with like multiple casts in a spot. You give it like 20 minutes or so and you're not getting anything. Most likely those catfish are migrating somewhere else. So you might want to move locations. But if you're in a spot, you should probably stay there. If you're in a spot you're catching fish, you probably stay there until the action subsides. So stay there until you're hammering them. And when they move, maybe you move. So which is going to be like every 20 minutes or so. So when targeting flatheads, it's a different story. But not that different. Many anglers come prepared to sit all night in a single spot, but that really isn't necessary. Throughout the night, flathead activity comes in waves. The two most productive times are just after sunset and just before sunrise. If you're targeting a large feeding flat and don't get a strike by the end of the first wave, move to another location before the early morning bite starts. When targeting a specific structure like a timber pile or hole, move every 30 to 60 minutes. When daytime catfishing, changing locations often is crucial. The most productive anglers hunt for active fish. They don't wait for receptive fish to find them. And I think in our Match the Hatch episode, we talked about targeting fish more than hoping they come to us.
Yeah, we want to find out how they're patterning and then match that.
You find the fish and you target them. It's like hunting for fish.
Let's talk about a fish that not a lot of people on this side of the pond really like to fish that much. Carp. Carp,
dude, they're fun to fish.
Carp are fun to fish, but it's a British sport.
It's a very British sport.
Researching this episode, I had to watch so many YouTube videos like on carp fishing.
Bottle of water.
A bottle of water, and I threw the bait out there, and bloody hell, the fucking bloody cunt just took my bait. My corn wasn't even there. Like, Jesus Christ, dude. It's fucking gross. I don't like you, British buddy. Accents. Except for any of our British listeners, you guys are cool.
Yeah, I'm not going to say what I was going to say because he said that. I was going to say, look at their teeth, but most British people know they don't have nice teeth.
No, they kind of stopped doing that after Austin Powers flamed them. All right, let's talk about the weather with carp. Carp are not as affected by the clouds and sun as most other species, but you can use the sun to tell you where the fish are going to be because they like to cycle from the depths into the shallows for the warmth. Light rains and heavy rains really help when it comes to carp fishing. After the rain, the fish like to travel into the spillways to find food.
Nice.
Yeah, it's not nothing. When wind is involved, carp are the only really affected in ponds or lakes. They don't really respond much in river and streams.
Huh.
Yeah.
So, you've caught quite a few carp, probably.
Yeah, I think probably my favorite carp story is we were fishing the Boisen Reservoir, and this was another one of those conversation is what's happening and fishing is secondary. Yeah. It's, you know, rods in a rod holder. We're having a conversation and if your rod moves, perfect. Anyways, we were talking, my buddy got a big hit and wasn't paying attention and the fish just took his rod into the water. Gone. Yeah.
Ever found again?
Well, that's a funny story. We were throwing at it like maybe we'll throw treble hooks or something.
Catch the line.
Just try to pull it in. Because you don't want to lose your rod. And that's not a fun piece of jewelry for the carp to have either. But just happen chance, I got a bite on my line that was, you know, 6 feet down the shore from him. I was like, holy shit, fuck you. You're fighting your lost stuff. I have mine right here. And I'm reeling it in. And then all of a sudden, it's that carp. I'm like, oh, sweet, I got a carp. And I pull it in. I pull my hook out of his mouth. Oh, fuck, there's another line here. I pull it out, and I'm just grabbing this line, and then I pull in my buddy's pole.
That's kind of lucky.
Yeah, I kept his pole.
That reminds me of one time when you and I were bass fishing on a certain river, and you had brought your regular spinning rod, and then you brought a little ice rod with you. And Coulter found a little metal rod sticking out of the water, and he put the handle of his ice rod in there, and he had it sitting out there with like bait or a worm of some sort, probably.
Yeah.
And him and I decided to wait out for a while. We're sitting there fishing for a while, and then Coulter looks over and goes, "Where's my ice fishing rod?" I looked over and was like, "Oh fuck!" So we're sitting there looking for a while, digging in that deep water, and we didn't find it. I think we took quite a few casts.
Yeah, just raking the bottom, yeah,
trying to find it, and we didn't. So that was a loss for Coulter.
Gone forever, Aaron Hernandez.
R.I.P. I have caught way too many carp in my time. for never targeting them or never trying to catch them. But one of my fond memories is I was fishing Alcova Lake one time, and it was one of those situations. Yeah, conversation first, fishing second. And we were pretty much just fishing off the bottom. We'd cast it out there, just sitting there bullshitting, drinking beers. And next thing you know, there's just like hit after hit, and we were pulling it. We pulled in like two or three carp. We got them onto shore, and we're like, well, these fish really fucking suck. Let's kill them. So my buddy, who's going to remain nameless through this story, decided to prop one of the carp up and take a... It was probably like a... The knife itself was probably 16 inches. The blade was like 12. And he decided that throwing it at that carp was the best way to end its life. So he sat there for like an hour playing throwing knives with carp.
Poor guy.
It was just one. We didn't do it to all of them. The rest of them just suffered without water.
Yeah, I mean, fuck them.
They're a fish that aren't supposed to be in our water.
No, they're an invasive species. Yeah,
generally game and fish say if you catch them, take them out and kill them.
Yeah, slit their gill plate and toss them back. Which,
ice fishing, if any of you guys ice fish very often, you'll get out on the ice and you see old holes and you can see like carp sitting in there from people catching them and just throwing them in their frozen holes. Kind of fun.
Yeah, it's an invasive species.
A lot of guys, depending on their regs, will use carp for bait too.
Their eyes for walleye fishing is a killer bait.
Oh yeah, big time.
But obviously check your regs first, because a lot of game and fish don't like you to use parts of game fish for bait. And yeah, then there's that, it's such a gray area,
there's
that
a fine
it's better
line.
Just ask.
Yeah. Ask, and if not, read your regs. If they're not simple enough, just call the game and fish.
They're pretty cool with telling you what not to do.
That's their job. They like doing it.
They're going to be a dick about it.
That's why we have them, though, because if you're not breaking the laws, they're not going to be a dick to you.
That's our show today, folks. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you guys a bunch for listening. We covered a lot more in this episode than I thought we would, actually. This went way longer. I had a really good time with it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was really fun researching it. I learned a lot of stuff. Hopefully you guys learned a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I hope we helped you become better anglers. And for those of you who are experienced fishermen, sorry if this was kind of a dull episode for you, but we have a fan base of guys who can outfish us to guys who don't even know how to fish.
Yeah, it just kind of depends.
So we're here to help the experienced to the unexperienced, inexperienced.
So be sure to leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. If you learned something, write in the review what you learned. If you didn't learn anything, tell us what you wanted to learn. And
ask us a question about it. Yeah, say, why are the walleye doing that? Or why do carp suck? And we'll try to answer that question on next week's episode if you get it sent in time.
Yeah, please send in questions. It was really fun to research this week's question. So
thank you, Cody H.
Yes.
Another thing we really like you to do. We haven't been as active recently. We're so busy, but please follow us on Instagram.
Yes, that's where our primary social media.
That's our social media. That's where we're putting all of our updates. That's where we're posting pictures of us with fish. That's where you're probably going to see Coulter fishing with that 12-foot rod and a kayak. That is where you're not going to find it anywhere else. We can't post it on iTunes or anything. So please go give us a follow on there. We'll most likely follow you back if you're cool. So
send us pictures of your fish. We'll shout you out.
Yeah, we've been doing that recently. Guys send in pictures of fish. We post them on our stories. We shout them out. And we've had quite a few guys we don't even know sending in pictures. That's been fun.
That's been a lot of fun. I like to see new faces with new fish.
Yeah, we've had guys from like Virginia, Montana, random states. And it's been a hoot. We've had some guys sending in pictures from deep sea fishing too.
That's fun. Because we don't get to do that very much.
No, because we're in Wyoming and that's far.
Pretty landlocked.
So yeah. Thank you for listening to our episode. I am Nolan Leiby.
And I'm Coulter Hansen. And we'll see you Monday, anglers.